Loose talk about riverine exercises and marine training packages made Nigerian commanders very nervous. The launch of Africa Command as a formal enterprise in 2008, during its initial operations, it had remained subordinate to European command, happened to coincide with another wave of violence in the Delta. Nigerian Foreign Minister Ojo Madueke pointedly complained of a lack of conceptual clarity about the Pentagon's intentions in the Gulf of Guinea. Beset by questions and criticisms from African capitals, Theresa Whelan felt compelled to declare publicly, "We have no intention of using Africa Command to try and control oil resources." What, then, was the true connection between the Pentagon's program to build up the Nigerian and other regional navies in the Gulf of Guinea, and the reality that about 25% of America's imported oil flowed through those waters? It is a fact that the United States government does not own any oil companies, Air Force Major General Michael Snodgrass, the deputy commander of Africa Command, said at the Africa Command's headquarters in Stuttgart. And if the United States decided to take over any country because of its oil, who would then exploit the oil? It's up to the free market to do that. What is the American military's message to ExxonMobil or Chevron if they point out that they are suffering attacks in the Niger Delta and offshore? Our message is nothing unless the President of the United States directs us to go do something like that, Snodgrass answered. It is not the mission of this command to provide the security, and we have no intention of going into an African nation and helping an industry, whatever the industry may be it the fishing industry, the oil industry, the textile industry, the fake African elephant industry, be protected within the confines of a sovereign nation. That's not our role. So my response to those companies is, you need to work out the arrangement with that sovereign nation to your satisfaction. And if you can't, you might want to reconsider your investment. We are not the guarantor of their security. Nigerian piracy presented the first major test of ExxonMobil's decision to adopt the voluntary principles governing corporate conduct in defense, security, and human rights. After ExxonMobil's fiasco in Aceh, Irving did not want to be placed in a position where security guards had to shoot at Nigerian pirates. By implementing the voluntary principles after 2005, ExxonMobil had effectively adopted a different approach to security. Passive defense, enhanced by surveillance and partnership with local Nigerian forces, however flawed they might be. That meant, as a practical matter, given the weakness of the Nigerian Navy and the reluctance of the United States to intervene directly, that the safety of ExxonMobil's offshore platform workers and managers depended increasingly on a defense strategy that seemed inspired by the 2002 Jodie Foster movie, Panic Room, in which a New York divorcee and her daughter lock themselves in a sealed room in their apartment as burglars assault them unremittingly. In general, the voluntary principles regime discouraged the direct use by private corporations of offensive tactics or military technology, such as the deployment of military radar on offshore oil facilities, which might make the platforms appear to be legitimate military targets. ExxonMobil Global Security did deploy patrol boats with unarmed observers in the Gulf of Guinea. The security boats motored out in forward sweeps, seeking to detect, as early in an assault as possible, armed attackers who might be en route to ExxonMobil facilities. If pirates were seen approaching, defense protocols kicked in, broadcasted alerts, lockdowns, the disablement of equipment, and retreat into interior safe rooms. Intelligence collection, threat mapping, and surveillance were about as far as ExxonMobil was now willing to go. The corporation's security officers used Google Earth satellite photography to create graphic maps overlaid with the locations and dates of recent attacks and the sites of militant camps in Akwa Ibom. They worked human sources and tried to understand who was who inside the camps. ExxonMobil security officers called Africa Command in Germany as attacks unfolded on the open ocean. "They call me a lot," a military officer there said, "mostly to give me situational awareness. Most of the time, we're not in a position to respond. That's part of what I tell them. It's not unlike what the Coast Guard tells lots of people in the maritime industry in the United States. You own the first 2 hours, meaning that self-defense would be required for at least that long. The oil corporations were wary of what they share and how much with the Nigerian Navy, a Pentagon official said, because the Navy was so transparently part of the crime problem. Even when ExxonMobil summoned the Nigerian Navy in desperation while under attack, said a third American official, they won't come. They have no will. ExxonMobil, therefore, had little choice but to go into lockdown, hunker down, and hope for the best. This was not a conventional portrait of the powers of the largest publicly traded corporation in the most powerful military nation in the world. It was, nonetheless, the reality ExxonMobil employees stationed offshore of West Africa endured in an age of uncontrolled piracy and massive corruption, coupled with the covenants of multinational corporate responsibility won by international human rights groups. Rex Tillerson might boast that ExxonMobil did business on its own terms around the world and walked away when conditions were unacceptable, but ExxonMobil determined that it could not afford to abandon its booked reserves in Nigeria, even as MEND's provocations deepened. After 2006, ExxonMobil relocated many of its Nigerian managers to a secure headquarters building on Victoria Island in Lagos and reinforced its passive defense systems offshore. Periodically, after kidnappings and speedboat raids of particular virulence, the corporation evaluated whether the Delta's violence had crossed a threshold that might argue for the corporation's total withdrawal. None of the ExxonMobil reviews reached such a radical conclusion, however. Where are they going to go? Asked an American official who worked with the company's managers. They don't want these reserves off their balance sheets. They need the reserves,